You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
We got your favorite sports and we got your favorite team.
Big Red, Duckers.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Way out in California, but we represent the scene.
Big Red, Duckers.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Pat, Joe, and Tweety are here to make some noise. We got a podcast. We're based at Galleon and Boyd. Big Red,
Duckers.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Big Red,
Duckers.
Yeah.
Big Red,
Duckers.
There we go.
Now.
Hey, welcome to the Big Red Cobcast. I'm Pat.
I'm Joe.
And you're figuring out that you can talk even when I'm starting to record. And we have a guest this week from the news department of KLIN, Kellen Hevigan. How you doing, Kellen?
Good. How are you guys today?
Good. I've only talked to you via Twitter. Did I say your name right?
Pretty close. Last name's got a long
That's a
name.
No.
That's... But it's all right. It's all right. I'm a lot worse.
That was a very polite no. Kellen, I'm just going to go ahead and start it off in the most awkward way because you already have a good job and a good career now, so I can go ahead and ask this question. But like, it's so interesting to me that your career started off in a high profile way in that like most people wouldn't want. And I used to be a student reporter. I made
any publicity is good publicity.
I made every mistake possible as a student reporter, but I A, didn't have Twitter to deal with, and B, was covering Wayne State instead of Nebraska. And
they have a smaller media following, I think.
A little bit, yeah. And not at a Mike Riley firing press conference. And so for those who don't know, there was a question asked at that press conference, and it felt like, man, that has to be a real tough way, a real tough thing to shake early on when you're still learning things. How did you kind of like move forward and become someone who is now a good and trusted member media member?
That and, was review, real... and review the question if it's not too painful.
Yeah, that was well, and review the one I just asked because it was about 9,000 minutes long. So, but yeah, what is that sort of transition like, shaking that as you go into, you know, covering the Huskers in your own way? I know you work in news more in sports, but like getting into that, how do you, what is that approach and how do you find that resiliency?
Well, it's a pleasure to be on with you guys today. And you know, the elephant obviously in the room was the question that I asked Coach Riley at his departing press conference Saturday, the day after you know, they got beat by Iowa. And I think that we're always taught as students and as reporters to stay hungry, just because you're in a big room with reputable media that have been doing this, that are experienced, doesn't mean you should feel like the opportunity that you can't ask a question, right? And so, you know, as this is building up, right, the one thing that it was really sinking in my mind was, you know, one of my goals is I want to tell stories of people that are affected by whatever the case is. And here at the time was a coach who's been coached, you know, 3 or 4 decades, and he had the biggest profile job he's ever had. And obviously the fit wasn't right. He didn't succeed on the field. And so I wanted to try to put in perspective, for people who would listen, who would watch, I wanted to see who is Coach Riley as a person, right? And who, because we see these coaches and players, and it's always their professional role. And here we are in this emotional, raw time, and he has the courage to get up here and face, basically face everyone and say, you know, I didn't succeed here. And so I wanted to get across this idea of what's this like right now? There's always a way to phrase a question. And in my case, I swung and missed drastically. I don't even think that comes to it. But I asked him the question, what's it feel like to be unemployed? I mean, I could give you the excuses of how I formulated it. It was inartfully worded. It was it wasn't compassionate. It wasn't caring. And because to be frank, as soon as that came out of my mouth, I froze. I still this day don't know what he said to it. Like, I just was like, oh my gosh, what came out of my mouth. And you could feel the room just froze with me. And, you know, Coach Riley, the man that he was and still is, just went on with it. And he just answered the question and goes, you know, because if you rephrase the question, and of course you go back and go, okay, what are ways that I could have done this better? You know, Coach, you've been doing this for 30 to 40 years. Tell us what's this like right now? And obviously people are still going to say that's still an inappropriate question, but you're going to probably elicit a similar answer. But the two questions are completely different. They come from different ends of the spectrum. One's that's a little bit more thoughtful, a little bit more compassionate, where the other one is just going straight at it. And obviously in certain times you need a question that is as raw as that one. And other times you need to be able to soften it up a little bit. It was definitely a learning experience from that one in several ways. It's not going to be the first bad question that I ask. It's not going to be the last bad question I asked. And that's not just for me, but anybody who works in a business is going to do something like that. But on a scale like that, you learn a lot, because I don't think it was within 15 minutes and somebody had tagged me on Twitter about it.
Yeah.
And it got pretty nasty on Twitter, and I had to delete it for a couple of days before I got back on it, and even still seeing some of the responses. So, you know, you've got two pieces. You got how do you respond from it professionally, but how do you respond from it emotionally, right? So here's I would have been 21? Yeah, 21 at the time, senior in college. We're going right into the holiday seasons right after Thanksgiving. And because for me, I take a lot of I put a lot of pride into what I do, and I put a lot of thought, and I like to, you know, be empathetic and show compassion when I'm doing my work. And all of a sudden what I did, there was absence in that. So it was less of the flack that I was getting from others. It was more of a self-reflection struggle. It was like, oh my goodness, this is not who I'm as a person. This was not who I was raised. This is not what I learned to do in that situation. And so trying to figure out, you know, okay, I need to take a moment. It's okay to be like this, but eventually you got to get back up on the horse. And I think what I did, because that was going right into basketball season, and I needed to focus on, you know, getting a job and working on my capstone, I actually stepped away from covering Nebraska with the student radio station, because I needed a break. You know, you talk about way that KRNU did our football broadcasts. You know, we do it just like very similar, I shouldn't say just like, but fairly similar to a lot of Power 5 football broadcasts, with pre-games and interviews and the game itself and then halftime. It takes a lot of energy to pull something like that off. And it was just one of those things to where I needed a break to settle down, kind of sort through, figure out, okay, what's next, you know? And then professionally, I don't think that probably bothered me as much as it did personally. You know, you learn from it and you go, okay, I got to make sure that I be a little bit more diligent, do a little bit more preparation, work through some things, really start to analyze and read the room, read who you're interviewing, and maybe not go so fast. That's one of my things, is I want to do it and do it fast and be done with it. But I also think that there's this idea that your lows and highs shouldn't define you, because Everybody can handle the big moment. There's no question about it. You know, when you're talking about calling a game, everybody can call a big game or a big play in a game, and everybody can describe the bad piece, but it's how you weave those two pieces together. And it's just as simple like this. It's like in our careers, it doesn't have to be limited to me, but we're all not going to have great days. And so how can you get from one low to the one high, and how do you find that interaction with each other, and how do you learn from it? I mean, because you can learn in the high moments, you learn from the low moments and go, okay, this is part of my story. This is what I've learned from it. I need to put that into action. Because if that instance, when I was a senior in college and asked that question, if that defined my career, that we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah.
Right. And that would end. Yeah.
So,
Speaking of blunt questions, welcome to the third member of the podcast, Tweety. How you doing, man?
Oh, is he in there?
Yeah, he is. Sorry. I was having computer issues and I couldn't get logged on.
Oh, God, your death room.
Yeah, the death room's back.
Oh, my God. It looks even worse with no lights on.
Oh, dude, I love it like this. It keeps it cooler. But also, I just wanted to say I missed everything you guys have been talking about. Can you just repeat all that again for me? No.
I want to make a comment, though, about the context of where he made that comment to Riley. You're in a Nebraska press conference with a Nebraska media talking to the Nebraska coach. If you're in New York and that happens, every single reporter is asking the same question he did, less delicately. So I think the context of being at a Nebraska press conference is what put him in such a position. Whereas if you are a New York Daily News reporter and the Yankee manager gets fired and you go, how does it feel to be unemployed? That room does not react the same way.
Well, that's what interests me is I've been around some of that Husker media. We've had some of them on this podcast. What, I mean, because surely they all had to recognize at the time that you were a student reporter. What was the reaction in that room? Was it varied? Was it uniform? Or what did you kind of get from those guys?
Well, within the room after the press conference was over, I realized what had happened and my phone had started blowing up and I was like, I'm getting out of here. And because I was like, I don't know what's going to happen as I'm trying to pack up our studio equipment. There were a couple individuals that came up and decided that they wanted to speak with me. I'm not going to say who.
Yes.
They weren't very nice in what they said, but it is what it is. And then afterwards there was a mix of individuals on Twitter that weren't part of the media. And then there were, individuals on the media who reached out, who said, don't worry about it. I didn't have a problem with the question. And then there was just from a couple of national people that said something, you know, what you had said at the beginning, I used to do this in the early 2000s and had Twitter been around, I probably wouldn't be working in sports media. So again, but that's the society we live in. So early on, it was kind of just who approached me. And then afterwards it got mixed. And then we got to Sunday night and then everybody decided to pump the brakes and realize, okay, he's a student, he learned. And I wrote, you know, and then somebody who says, well, I used to ask stupid questions all the time, you know, so everybody kind of took a step back, took a breath, and then realized a little bit more of the context, a little bit where it came from. Again, maybe doesn't excuse what happened, but that's kind of how
I'm sorry, you're making you feel too bad about this.
Yeah, thousands.
You feel too bad about this. You were in the press. I got to say something about the
press. This is the wrong podcast to express guilt, basically.
Yeah, that guy was 4-8. He's a real piece of shit. No, I'm kidding.
No, but listen to me. I know this is sports and this is entertainment, but when you have other reporters coming to you and telling you not to ask a question some way, F those guys right in the face, because that is being a coward. Okay, maybe the phrasing was a little bad, but we are in this country, in this situation. Listen, because the press is polite and afraid of people in power. Your job as a reporter.
Joe's going.
And
I'm Joe's
sorry.
Wrong
I know. No, I'm not wrong. I know this is Nebraska and it's entertainment and it's football, but your job as a reporter is to get the information. And if somebody tells you don't be rude or anything, that's because they don't want the information to get out. So fuck those guys straight up. And I rarely say that, but don't be, if you're a journalist, you are here. That's the only thing keeping this fucking country from being a goddamn communist.
All right, calm down, Joe. We're talking about Husker.
No, I'm not. Because I hear this kid talking, and I hear him say how other reporters came up to him and chastised him, right?
Well, right.
That's a crock of shit. They are cowards. Maybe the way he phrased it is bad. But you asked a question you ask to get the information, and that's what's wrong with the press in this country, is they're cowards. I'll say it right now.
No, I love this part.
Cowards. Cowards. Don't be a coward.
Tweety has a question.
Stand up for
I have a question for you. The combined age of the two guys that approached you after the interview or whatever. Was their combined age over 130 years old?
I'm gonna be honest. I have no clue how old they were. So
they look like they probably are that old, because they sound like they are probably old.
He's gonna be trying to get you to say their names this whole time.
No. I don't care. I know who they are. I don't need. I've met so many of those guys. I know who the assholes are. I can pretty much start naming names and probably nail them in 10 names.
Well, I can say this. Your rant was very similar to my broadcasting professor's rant that he would have after it happened. So
your broadcasting professor. Exactly. Somebody who knows, you can get into the whole professor thing, but I am furious about this whole thing as I'm finding more out about it. And if you want to say who the names of the people are, that's fine. Because I'd like them to come at me.
He said no.
Not him. Tweety.
Tweety's going to try to get their names, but also tell me their names.
No, Tweety says he knows their names. I don't want it from
Kelly. It's not hard to pick out the assholes. Other question is this. I have a legit question, though, like a real question for you.
Yeah.
So was mine.
Well, yours
mine
was
a rant.
Question.
Mine was
there
a rant.
There was no question mark at the end of yours. Yours was an exclamation.
Mine was a rant.
Do you think... had it been Bo Pelini or Sean Eichhorst, that people would have given you as much shit? Do you think it's because he was a grandpa and like people thought he was very kind? They felt like, oh no, he's attacked my grandpa. Do you think that has something to do with it?
If it was Kevin Warren, they wouldn't be mad.
Well, I will say this. I think maybe. But I think if Bo Pelini was in that room, he probably would have kicked me out. So at the same time, though, and, you know, Coach Pelini wouldn't also have not been in the same position that Coach Riley would have been in, meaning that I can't envision Coach Pelini getting up after he's gotten fired to do a press conference like that versus Coach Riley. You know, the other thing that was interesting is that for as much of the reporting that went on, myself included, about the criticism and the critique of Coach Riley as a coach, and then to have this response to my question really is an intricate intersection between coverage and response, if that makes sense. I had a hard time trying to figure out, well, where does that come from as well? To me, at this point, it's water under the bridge. You know, that's what now, 3 years ago that happened. You know, I've moved on, and there's no sense in crying over spilled milk, as my mother always would say.
You moved on until these jackasses brought you on to ask the question about it.
You know, you got to, you know, and I'll be honest, this is the first time I've ever said anything publicly, because I made no response on Twitter to anybody that responded to me. Some people said you should do it individually to each one. I'm like, not going to happen.
Let me do it for you. Fuck off.
I don't know if I would go that far.
No, you don't. You wouldn't. But that's, you're professional.
This is the first time that I've ever talked about it publicly. I mean, I've shared perspectives with friends and with some coworkers, even at KLIN. And knew we was going to have to talk about it sometime, but. You know, there are times where I think back to it. I'm like, okay, don't pull this mistake again. Like, you know, there's flashbacks that come every once in a while. But, you know, like I said, you've got to be better for the mistakes.
But what good is a mistake, though, if you can't learn from it? I mean, that's the whole point of them.
And again, it's the phrasing, I think, that I would agree with in your point. But the question, you come up for a press conference – be ready for questions. You know, like, and I think you mentioned it. Riley shook it off. Yes, Pelini would have come after you and choked you out in the room, perhaps. But Riley, you know, look, that guy's been fired 4 or 5 times at that point, at least. So,
Pelini's all bark, no bite.
Yeah, true. But my point again comes to like the asking of the question and backlash about this. You have more than made your amends just by saying, "Yeah, I could have phrased it differently." I feel like that's it. And again,
what was the phrasing? Well, I don't. I mean, it's,
he
I don't
said, remember. "How does it feel to be unemployed?"
How's it feel to be unemployed? That's a great question.
Exactly, but again, look
I
at
told
it coming
you our
out of his.
Guy was in here.
But he's 21 asking it with his baby face there. Look at if you're in New York, and again.
He,
and somebody like me comes up and says, "Hey, how's it feel to be unemployed?"
Coach.
Hold up. You guys are all talking at the same time. Go ahead.
I made the point before. Like, the context is, everyone can jump onto this Cub reporter here because he's an easy target. But if you got, you know, some asshole like Frank Isola coming in and going, hey, how's it feel to be unemployed? You know, there's a totally different context than that. And yours was an accident. Isola would do it on purpose. You know what I mean? You are being a real reporter and saying, I didn't mean to cause, I didn't want to be the center of the story. You know, and that's what happened. But other reporters do, and I'm not saying they should, but I'm just saying that your contrition is far more than it needs to be.
Well, and I felt, because then I took myself out of the reporter role and put myself back in the person. Because sometimes when you're interviewing somebody, I like to go, okay, if I'm being interviewed in this situation, what questions do I want to be asked to get the story out? And that, in that circumstance, didn't fit the puzzle. And again, we've covered that it was not worded well. I felt to the point to where, you know what, I felt personally, maybe not so much in a professional role as you guys have talked, but just as a person, right? Because I think sometimes in our business, whether it's the news or you cover sports, in our business, we lose this idea of that we're human beings, we have feelings, we have character, we have integrity. How do we allow ourselves to feel the emotions of what's going on, right? I mean, today, talking about somebody, a Lincoln police officer who was shot in the line of duty. Here as reporters, we've got to go out, deliver the facts, deliver the stories. But at the same time, incredibly beyond sad moment for the community, how as reporters do we take a moment to empathize with what's going on? How do we handle our personal emotions when the mic is off and when we're at home? And so when that realization happened, I wrote a letter and apologized to Coach Riley. And because I thought that's what I would do. And, you know, at the end of the day, when I'm done with whatever I'm doing, what do people want to remember me as a reporter and even as a person? So I took that step, and then, you know, eventually you move on and the pain, you know, the issues get less and less and everybody forgets about it eventually.
I respect the letter writing. I think that's a cool move on your half. Like, I think that's a cool move. I do want to say this, though. If Mike Riley goes 4-8, right, and you ask him, how does it feel to go 4-8, right? It's kind of a shitty question. We all know the answer, but it's a question that you need the answer to write the story. If you're doing any sort of a emotional connection to this coach, you have to have that question. How do you feel about doing such and such? So when you ask a coach, or anybody for that matter, how does it feel to be unemployed? That's a fair question, especially to someone that's in power, because all you're saying is, like, tell me the emotions that are going through your head right now. That's an important aspect to any story, unless your job is just date, time, who, what, where, when, know why. We don't want to talk about
right.
anything emotional. You got to keep that emotional aspect in it. And there's nothing wrong with what you did. I appreciate you writing him a apology letter because of whatever reason you felt you needed to, but I hope you don't think you even needed to do that. Like, I don't think you did anything wrong at all.
Well, what was the question? When you got the question. I mean, if you heard the questions Tweety asks, you would blush just from hearing those. But what was the, when people came up to you, and not to dwell on this forever and everything, but was it about phrasing or the asking of the question in itself that was criticized? Because again, you also have to look at I don't know what the room is, but I know Nebraska's press coverage is bigger than most Big Ten teams, especially given where it is. And I'm just imagining this room and imagining you with a bunch of like 45-year-old dudes who've been doing this for a long time, and maybe they didn't ask the question. And what was there criticism about the question or the phrasing?
Probably more of the phrasing. I would say this, because what I've been told, because I for the life of me don't remember what he said.
Yeah.
I don't remember his response.
You went into a whiteout.
Yeah, it was like a blackout. And what I've been told is that the majority of the stories the following day the stories of the following day had used that answer to my question. So I think it was probably both, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but they used the answer to the question, which, again, hypocrites.
we'll use that now to transition into your current role at KLIN alongside fellow former Cobcast guest Jack Mitchell. You're kind of more on the news side than the sports side, but as a result, you had Ted Carter on recently, and I found that interview particularly interesting. You know, talking to the University of Nebraska president, about the current sporting landscape. What were your kind of impressions talking to Dr. Carter this past week? Because obviously Nebraska feels like they're kind of on an island most of this late summer, early fall. What did you take from that interview most of all?
Well, I think to understand where that interview came from, we've got to back up and look at what type of reporting that we've done from the beginning. And so we had the announcement from the Big Ten. We had the backtracking, the reversal of the Big Ten. And we were originally scheduled to have Chancellor Green on to talk a little bit about sports, but talk about academics. Because, granted, there's a lot of talk about sports and Big Ten and obviously what the players right now who aren't playing or watching all of these other institutions playing. Right, that's a big story in and of itself. But you also have, in Nebraska's case, and if you look university-wide, not just UNL, but across the system, you're looking at 50-some thousand students who are also trying to get back to learning, while some of them don't want to go back because they don't feel safe, while the others say that, you're talking about wide ends of the spectrum. And so while college sports emanates, it's not the central part to the conversation. So I think to understand sports, you have to understand the entire academic situation. So we were supposed to have Chancellor Green on, and as a reporter, you can't just put the chancellor of the university on the same day that you have all of this news and then ignore the elephant in the room, which is the Big Ten. You're not playing football. And so we were persistent in trying to continue to have him back on. And so Chancellor Green comes on the show, and Jack does his interview with him. And then I think we followed up with just a specific academic conversation. And in the middle of this, because we were talking about President Carter and his role, because I think he was the first one on before we got Chancellor Green. And one of the things that we talked about with President Carter was, this was specifically based on enrollments and how the enrollment has grown across the system wide, which is a whole nother conversation. But then, of course, again, I've got to ask about sports. And I will say my impression from that conversation that I had with President Carter, very confident. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he is trying to get, and again, the caveat should be that Chancellor Green is the voting member on the Council of Chancellors and Presidents for the Big Ten. That needs to be up at the forefront. But obviously the chancellor and the president are going to, they're going to be in lockstep with one another. And so talking with him, he's very confident. They know what they're doing, and they're advocating for their student athletes. They're advocating for the coach, and they're advocating for the state, for that matter. I mean, you talk about, mental well-being for all these student athletes who are trying to handle this mentally and emotionally, and trying to say, we have to have people in the room, like Chancellor Green, and publicly that are going to bat for these student athletes who are on the sidelines right now. Not only that, but you have to have somebody to go to battle for you, because you look at the economy of Lincoln and what Husker football game days do for economics in this city, much less the state. And then we're all going nuts over here because we have nothing to do on Saturdays. And who wants to watch Iowa State lose to, who are they playing? A team out of Louisiana, or Arkansas State leading Kansas State? Like,
watch Premier League soccer on Saturdays.
So,
that's like, better. It's better anyway, especially the non-Big Ten football.
So I just am impressed when he gets up there and he goes, this is what we're doing. This is what we know. And here's the thing. They want to be transparent about it. There's no pulling the curtains back over what's been talked about. They're very open. I'm also impressed because it's like, well, they're open and everybody else doesn't want to talk about it. But at the same time, there's still enough respect for their colleagues that are on this council that they're working with other administration, because you can't alienate everybody else on the council because you still have to work together.
Right. And so, there's going to be other issues.
Yeah, there's going to be other issues that all right, let's say the Big Ten says we're playing, but we have to figure out, you know, testing protocols. We've got to figure out travel. We've got to figure out how many, you know, are we limiting team representatives, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
there's all of these pieces that come together that you still have to get in a room. You may disagree. It may be 11-3, but you can't completely upset and turn everyone off and says, I'm not helping Nebraska because they've said this, this, and this. So there's a phenomenal line there that's been walked that says we're advocating, but at the same time, we're still trying to respect everybody else's position.
And they've got to get the doctors to say, that's what I like about the way the Big Ten, I know that you see the other leagues starting to play football and it's like, what the, and even the Big Ten might be a little backtracking. Maybe they came out a little early with the canceling of the season. But I thought it was an abundance of caution move. I also think when you mention that the Big Ten is more than just the football, that is true. These are huge institutions with huge academic reputations and making money in a variety of ways outside of athletics. Not that the other leagues aren't doing that too, but I think the Big Ten is well equipped to miss a season. Just in terms of finances, I mean, some schools will suffer. But Nebraska has a lot of money and everything.
Yeah, but what
I also think – wait. I also think the Big Ten
– Joe's got more ranting to do.
A little bit. And Nebraska in particular have, like you said, approached this in a mature way. Yes, people are yelling at them about canceling. But what Nebraska did with getting enough tests for them and an opponent and securing that on their own and doing all the steps, unfortunately – Nebraska is going to do that. Purdue is not. And that's what you have. That's where the problem is. And that's a microcosm in the Big Ten that also points to the bigger picture in college football where, yes, a school like Nebraska that has a great medical facility, you know, up the street and thinks and is going to do everything to protect their players is great. But some other school that just lost Rondell Moore and is going to have a 3-9 season, they don't care, so they're not going to take the precautions so that they don't have to do it. You know,
but
like,
take that money there's no body, that's for sure.
What's
but
that?
There's no central organization in the Big Ten or in college football to make sure everyone does what Nebraska, for example, is doing.
By the way,
that
Joe,
was a convoluted question. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna start putting a stopwatch on your questions.
Yeah.
But I need to do the same for me, too. I think the part that's interesting to me, and we've talked to a few people about this, whether it be Dirk Chatelain or Dan Wolken or Pat Forty, like, I'm curious your take on things, because it feels like, so you just described, Kellen, a pretty nuanced and detailed discussion with the president, about a lot of, like, finely woven things. But it feels like from like kind of the national perspective, and that's me now kind of generalizing, but there's a lot of like broad strokes, especially when describing Nebraska and the Big Ten. What's kind of your vantage point as far as like observing the local response and the national response to Nebraska in particular?
Well, I think
what's the stopwatch time on that, Pat?
90 seconds.
I think the key is that locally, and I'm going to group all of our local media together, is, you know, we see the, for lack of better terms, the day-by-day workings of the university, right? Whereas the national media will look at headlines or they won't understand the full concept, and they're trying to cover national stuff, right? So they're, and I'm not making excuses for what's been said, because I do think some of the things that have been said nationally have been out of bounds. So I do think that that's been the case. Ass. Well, but I don't consider
he's not a journalist.
Yeah, I was going to say I don't consider Desmond Howard or Wilbon somebody who probably
matters.
They're personalities is what they are. They're not journalists that do it. Now I get it. You've got some journalists, sports reporters, who have taken a similar narrative against that. But again, they're writing for a national audience, we're writing for a local audience. So there's different tastes to how that will be perceived. That's one thing. Also, they're trying to take all of these perspectives across the country. And so they're balancing several stories probably at the same time while, okay, I'm just going to pick this headline and put it in there. And you're going to have to interpret for yourself if that's good or bad, right? I can take the time locally at KLIN and sit down and go, okay, this is what the statement is. I know everything that's behind it. I know most of the information that's behind it. And I can put out what I understand. And again, Nebraskans who listen to the radio, watch television, or read the paper are going to interpret what's being said differently than somebody in Ohio or somebody in Florida. So again, it's the paradigm that is created because of regional differences in personalities and how we interpret things. Because let's say, for example, somebody from Iowa City knows as much as I do. They're still going to write it and perceive it differently because they've got differences there, just like we do here, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, and it's easy for the national narrative to be, oh, Nebraska, they think they're not good anymore. We can blow them off. They're irrelevant. And I think it's just an easy thing for the country, for the national media to do, is to just kind of push Nebraska to the side and say, you know, we know, like, because of the last 20 years, and we've been barking the whole time, it's just a bad time for Nebraska to try to stand up and make the point nationally.
Well, and I think that's because we talked about it at work, you know, Scott Frost coming out and saying he wants to play to us in Nebraska, you know, absolutely, we're going to get behind that, means so much, but it's perceived way differently when Ryan Day does it. Like, for example, College Game Day today, they had four coaches on. Ryan Day and Penn State were representing the Big Ten, and I think there was Stanford's coach and Utah's coach was on a segment with Reese Davis, and they were talking about it. And I didn't have a chance to listen to what they said. But the point that I think is relevant here, if Scott Frost was Ryan Day and Ryan Day's position had the success of what Penn State is, he's up there instead. But instead, yeah. when you had four games last year, won five games the year before, I mean, nationally, if you're going to be completely 100% objective to this, there's a little there. They've got a point in terms of, well, Nebraska just doesn't have. I don't agree with the idea that when Nebraska gets into the room, that they don't have a voice. Everybody's going to listen to Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. I don't believe that. I don't think that's at all the case. But again, you look at success. Nebraska doesn't have it. The others do. People who win games are going to have the voice when it comes to national reporting. I do believe inside the room, the door is shut way different. Because I think when the door is shut, leadership comes out. And so when I look at who's behind the closed door, I look at Chancellor Green, who's Nebraska's leader. People are going to listen when Chancellor Green talks. Just as the same way they're going to listen to Ohio State's brand new president, or Penn State's, or Michigan State. That's behind the closed door, because I think in that case, people, the decision makers, recognize they see leadership and they know what happens. So I think that there's a difference there that I'm outlining. But then again, when there's pundits, when there's personalities talking, just from a standpoint of we're going to judge someone's credibility based on how well they've done, there's a factor there for Nebraska.
Yeah.
Also, you get a lot of clicks ripping Nebraska.
Well,
and that goes back. True. That goes back to the point of, you know, who doesn't want to see outside of Nebraska or outside of Nebraska fan base, who doesn't enjoy whomever it was a couple of years ago beating, you know, some FCS team or whomever it was, wasn't FCS. I don't even Troy. Who doesn't enjoy seeing that? It's just like when I came on earlier and took a jab at Iowa State and Kansas State, and I've got friends that are at both of those institutions. It's just the same way. People like the underdog. But people like the underdog when they're beating a dog that's down, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yes. Right. So, right. When you used to be a big dog, they'll kick you for as long as they can.
Yeah.
Tweety, you've been chomping at the bit.
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts, and I would love to hear who agrees with me and who's wrong. So,
how many cadavers are behind you in the dark, Tweety? I just need to know.
Yeah, it'll make you feel better, Joe.
I mean, this looks like, there! It still looks a little like a kill room, but at least there's
light. It hasn't changed at all, so it should look exactly the same as before.
You can see the couch on which you murder people.
Yes, right.
So, Ryan Day is a bitch. He is Murtaugh. He's Danny Glover.
He's Murtaugh. That guy was great.
Danny Glover's, yeah, there's nothing wrong with Danny Glover. You need Danny Glover.
I'll take Danny Glover over Mel Gibson.
No, you won't. Mel Gibson is far more important than Danny Glover.
You're talking the characters. You're talking the characters, not the actors.
No, not all the like the juice stuff. Not that stuff. Yeah. Like the in the loose cannon. You need the loose cannon.
Talking rigs.
Yes.
Thank you. And that's what Scott Frost is. And that's why the national media wants pretty boy Ryan Day to go up there with their suit and tie and be respectful, because Scott Frost is going to go up with dip in his mouth. And that's what he's going to do. He's going to be a little redneck. He's going to be a little bit redneck. And they don't want to deal with him. And that's why they have Ryan Day. That's why they have James Franklin. Because they're just well kept.
Scott Frost is well kept. The guy's like my age. Yeah, but he's 10 years also, younger.
He won't be clean shaven. He's going to say exactly what he thinks. He's not going to bite his tongue. The media does not like dealing with Scott Frost, from what I hear, because he is not afraid to tell them to go fuck right off. But he's also cool. Like, he's also like the kind of guy you want to have a beer with. He's George W. Bush, and Ryan Day is, you know, Donald Trump.
Even though
you lost me at that analogy.
all of this. None of what you said makes sense.
It all makes 100% sense. But that's
just a question
one
for him, though.
We can move on from that. I'm over that.
All right. He got mad that I got to do a rant and he didn't, and I think that's what it all comes
from. No, I get mad because you see guys like the row the boat.
Yeah, just say row the boat.
Row the boat guy.
PJ Fleck.
PJ Fleck, thank you. He
PJ Boat.
He is the most, he's a corporate shill. That's what he is. He's not a player's coach. He's not in it for Minnesota. He's not trying to help his players. He's bullshit. Ryan Day is him with wins.
They want the next job, those two guys. Maybe not Ryan Day, actually. But PJ Fleck wants the next job.
Right. Scott Frost is happy where he is.
And this is also, I'm going to just come back to this, and you want to make a comment about PJ Fleck. You're right. He is insincere. I think Frost is sincere. When Frost says he thinks the players are safer under their care, the school has done shit to prove that. Getting all those tests, doing all those things, it's not just lip service. Row the boat guy is lip service to me. And I'll just make a little parallel to journalism for you there, Kellen. Have you heard of Bob Woodward?
Yeah, everyone's heard of him this week.
I've never heard of Bob Woodward.
Well, here's the difference between journalism and capitalism. Journalism is getting the president to admit he's killed Americans and telling people. Capitalism is getting the president of the country to do that on a recording and waiting 5 months to release it. That's capitalism, because he wanted to write his book. Sorry, I just had to say that. Kellen, if I ever see you holding information for 5 months that will cost lives, I will no longer respect you.
And then somebody says, that's capitalism, I want you to shoot that person in the face for not
understanding what capitalism is. It's true, Ryan. You should be the one saying it. You're as cynical as I am. It is capitalism. He knows it.
Oh, man.
It was to sell his book.
I have a question. Does it typically go off the rails on this podcast?
This is more on the rails than it normally is.
This is the most on the rails. Joe hate each other.
No, we don't.
I was just about to ask, how happy are you that you gave up a good chunk of your Saturday to just get yelled at by Tweety and Joe?
I'm yelling with you, not at you.
I'm also yelling with him. I'm yelling to him.
I have a legit question.
Compare war stories with Jack on Monday.
I do have a legit question for you. When a guy like Scott Frost says, I'm doing this for the state of Nebraska, for the city of Lincoln, not just for the players in the university, but also for the citizens, right, of Lincoln. And then you have a guy like Ryan Day who has a shot at a national championship. He, at least he thinks he does. Probably going to have a pretty good record. Potentially, if you're looking at the past, Scott Frost is going to have a losing record. I mean, if you go –
Ryan Day's going to lose his Heisman quarterback too. Ryan Day has a quarterback going pro next year.
Yeah. But, I mean, do you think damn it, Joe, you just wrecked my train of thought. It's very easy to do. Do you think that because of the success of Ryan Day versus the non-success of Scott Frost at the University of Nebraska, that that sort of makes one or the other feel more or less sincere?
It depends where you're at. I mean, because, again, you know, if you want Nebraska to get back to whatever standards you imagine that, for some people it's 9 wins. Some people it's a national championship. Some people it's a bowl game.
For Pelini, it's 9 wins.
But you can't get to that standard if you don't play. You're not going to get any better by practicing against each other. I mean, you will, but ultimately you can, and you can't measure that by practice. We could practice, you know, they could say, you know what, we're not playing, but you know what, have as many practices as you want. You're going to get better, but you don't have a measuring stick there. Right. So to your point where Ryan Day, they have to play games because maybe on a measuring stick, they're above Nebraska. Well, if Nebraska's going to close this gap, they got to be able to do something. Right. And so you can't just sit back and do it. So for Nebraska and the fan base, and if you're Scott Frost, yeah, it's going to be sincere because everybody knows that if Nebraska wants to stop winning just 4 or 5 games, they got to play to get better. But at the same time, if you're Ohio State, he's going to be sincere because they already know that they can have a shot at the national championship.
Why shouldn't he be sincere? He has nothing to lose.
Yeah, he's got nothing to lose. And let's be honest, Scott Frost doesn't have much to lose either at this point. They're just on
nothing.
Different spectrum.
Well, his yes. job.
Well, I think everything Frost has done makes me think, yes, he loves the team and everything, but it also makes me think he thinks it's a good team. Because, again, I look at the other teams. I look at Purdue. I look at Wisconsin. And how they are not fighting about this whole thing. And I know that, like you said, they have to play to improve no matter what. But I think he knows he wants to show people
but
what
also,
they got.
You also have to be careful because there could be spun at a national narrative. Let's say for whatever reason, Nebraska, Ohio State, Iowa, a couple of other schools end up. Let's say the Big Ten plays, right? But there's a handful of schools that we're not going to play. Let's say you get five, six schools to play. And let's say the Big Ten says you can schedule a handful of non-conference games, but you got to play your Big Ten conference. Nebraska's got to be careful here because if Nebraska and Ohio State play from a national perspective only, and Ohio State slaps Nebraska like they've done X amount of times before, the laughing stock that'll happen will never end. It just continues a national narrative that's already been set up. But locally, you're happy that they're playing. Coach Frost is happy that they're playing. Here's an opportunity where we get to be better. And if he believes his team is really good, and if he believes that they have made a significant step from last year, then of course they're going to play. But we also heard last year, good practice.
Best practice ever.
Right. Yeah. And so, but again, I think it really goes back to, and this is not a shot at some of the other institutions. And I say it's not a shot because I'm not covering Michigan State daily. I'm not covering Indiana daily. So I can't come out and say that their coaches aren't advocating for them versus, as I've said, it's all about advocating for your players and your institution, like what we've seen at Nebraska. Because we have to remember that I think the majority of coaches and athletic directors at these institutions want to play. I think they would. In fact, I know that they would, regardless of whatever testing system is created. I think they would. The problem is I think that there are differences of opinions in the chain of leadership at some of the institutions from who are in the room on the president's council of presidents and chancellors. And I think there's a chain linkage. That's why you don't see a message coming out of East Lansing like you do out of Lincoln or out of Columbus or Iowa City, for example. But we also have to put ourselves in our president's or chancellor's shoes and go, okay, well, of course my football coach and my athletic director are going to advocate to play. Of course they are. That's their job. Their job is to figure out a way to play. My job, though, I have to think of all of the other ramifications that playing has. Beginning, you've got, okay, student athletes that come down with COVID-19. You've got the unknown whatever myocarditis is going to do. You've got, let's be honest, it's political. There's no question about it. It's political. If you come out against the president of the United States, what's the response of your university staff, just first and foremost, much less everybody else? I've got to think of economics part of it. Like, from an administration standpoint, there's so much more picture that they have to take in versus athletic director and a football coach they're going to advocate to play. That's not said that they're also not thinking about that. But we know this. We can look at numbers. We can look at data. And you can come up with – you can look at one number and we can spin it any way we want. That's what we're – you take out sports and we look at COVID-19 data right now. And you look and go, wow, there was a ton of cases announced yesterday. Well, the positivity rate is low and you're still going to get all these different interpretations. That's the problem. We don't have one way we can look at something. If we did, everything would be easy.
Yeah.
Fractured all around.
We have kept you for about an hour and yelled at you a bunch. Tweety Joe, well, Tweety, you haven't gotten to answer, ask many questions. You got more?
I mean,
you got nothing.
I'm all yours this afternoon. I got nothing on the docket.
So. First of all, I just want to restate, I wasn't yelling at you. I was yelling with you. I feel correct. Like
we're on. And I was yelling to you.
Joe just wanted to make sure you heard him. I was actually on your side.
I'm just apparently loud. I'm getting texts from my wife that I'm being.
Yeah, I also
loud.
Have somebody.
Wait, you're loud?
I've gotten the same thing. She keeps pumping her head into the room and like.
Really? My wife? Well, my wife's in a whole other part.
Yeah, you have a kill room. We do not.
And it's super sound dampened.
Okay, let's get out of here. I got to go.
No, I want to ask. I really want to ask more questions about this because I am fascinated by it. You look at Ohio State, right?
I may come back in. I got to run for this second. If I don't come back. Hey, Kellen, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Take care.
Sorry to yell.
Do it. You got to do what you got to do.
All right.
Okay. Joe's not sincere. You have to believe that about Joe. So I just saw a tweet where it was like Ohio's. I have not been on this podcast for like 6 weeks now. And so it's just nice to be back. And that's why I just keep wanting to talk. So Ohio State, I just saw a tweet where it listed all the teams that are playing in Ohio State, right? And the only one that's not playing, that's playing in the state of Ohio, and then the only team that isn't playing is Ohio State. Every other team, I believe, is playing. From high school to pro, everybody's playing except for Ohio State. Do you think that we will be back, that teams like Ohio State are going to eventually be able to like point that stuff out? Like, literally, what does it matter if we have fans when they're going to all this other stuff?
Here's the thing. If the vote is 11-3, and by the bylaws, you got to get to what, 9 votes, if that's my understanding, that's correct. You need 6 flippers. I don't foresee that happening. I don't think you can get six presidents or chancellors to flip. I just don't think. I'm probably going to have 4. I think you can do that. But again, 9 is the threshold. Here's the question, though. Are we talking about an October 3rd, an October 10th start date? Are we talking about Thanksgiving? Are we talking about January? Because I think that's an extremely crucial piece. Ohio State and Nebraska want to play as soon as possible. They want to get enough games in, especially for Ohio State, because they want to play in the college football playoff. It does Ohio State no good to play after Thanksgiving. It doesn't. Right. Nebraska could be a different argument. Yeah, we get to play, and at least we've got a season. We got better this year. Now, I'm going to look like an idiot when I say that, and if Nebraska goes out and goes undefeated, and it's the team that we all have envisioned that Nebraska team should or could be.
I hope you look like an idiot then.
Well, and I'll take that one. I will go back and publish this publicly on my own Twitter, so if that's the case. So I think that that's the case. I think the longer that this happens, the Big Ten will say yes. But everybody talks about this idea of a spring football season. I hate it. I think it's dumb for 1,000 reasons. Do I think a November Thanksgiving start date works? Probably. But why would how cold is it in the Big Ten in December?
Yeah.
Frigid. So now all of a sudden, well, we can play in stadiums. Do you realize you've got athletic departments that are literally bleeding money? You're cutting other sports programs, and now you want to go play and spend money for travel and food and hotel and all of these things by going and playing in Detroit? Really? And what's that do for a local economy? Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, okay, I can go to a bar. I can go to a bar and watch a game and patronize a bar. But if there's restrictions in place, you're still going to struggle there. So again, is there a way to play? Possibly, but it's going to come down to this. The Big Ten says it's an individual basis. Unless the Big Ten decides, go about it yourself.
That's the only way
I foresee it happening.
I would assume that as local media, you guys know more than the average person. I feel like me and Pat pay a lot more attention than the average person, but we don't have access at all.
We're in California.
We're in California. Plus, we're also just not media. We're assholes with mics.
You weren't supposed to nod your head at that.
Well, I mean, you should nod your head because it's 100% true. I'm more of an asshole than Pat, but we're both assholes.
I'm sneaky.
God, man, I'm so glad I quit smoking weed. It's 3 days in, and I'm like, God, my brain is so bad. Knowing what you know, what do you think will be the outcome?
From a conference-wide standpoint, I just don't foresee the Big Ten league-wide playing. If there were a situation that could arise where the Big Ten is okay with institutions playing themselves, then, I mean, let's just be honest. If the Big Ten, for some reason, decides to go, you know what, we're not going to play as a league, but if you're Nebraska, Ohio State, Iowa, Penn State, and you want to play, go for it. Of course Nebraska's going to play. That's a no-brainer. We know that they want to play.
Yeah. Big Ten would be pretty dumb to do that, though, yeah?
Probably. I mean, it depends how much the Big Ten cares about their institutions.
Or how much they care about the view of the conference. Because what's the point of a conference if you can just break away from it and come back?
At this point, the Big Ten has bungled the PR of this so bad that it's not going to make a difference at this point if they let certain institutions play and others they don't. I mean, let's just be honest. It can't get any worse than what it already is. Locally, the criticism is about the Big Ten. Nationally, it's about the institutions making these wrong decisions for the most part. So it's not going to matter from a national perspective about the Big Ten because the national narrative is how the institutions aren't backing conference unity. So what difference do they make? They're just going to say, well, the institutions are being whatever and doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably truth to that. Do
you think that the reason that is nationally is because, for example, ESPN, they want to get on Scott Frost and they want to, but they don't really care so much. They let Ryan Day have a slit, you know, they let him have a pass. They don't really seem to be bothering Kevin Warren at all. How much of that is they don't care what Nebraska as an entity thinks of them versus they don't want to start shitting on the Big Ten because a big chunk of their income comes from Big Ten games, and they don't want to start a feud with Big Ten, especially when ESPN, let's not sugarcoat it, they're falling apart too. I mean, that's a piece of shit company that's firing people left and right. That's, you know what I mean? It's literally falling apart.
Well, you also have to remember, you can't bite the hand that feeds you. So, I mean, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Pac-12, their major network deals are with Fox. We know that. The primetime Big Ten football games get aired on Fox. We know that on that network. And then the Big Ten has their own network where they give you the middle of the road conference games. Sometimes they've got a pretty good one scheduled. And ESPN will pick up what they can every now and then. But you also got to remember, though, Ohio State, Michigan, that has aired on ESPN before, or Michigan State, Ohio State in prime time, they get millions of viewers. And so you have to continue to remember that if, you know, coverage and how we portray, we have to be careful because, let's be honest, the majority of these decisions are driven by money. If not, it's all driven by money. Because I think if you were to sit down and say, if we're going to make the decision based on the health and safety of players, I think it's probably fair to say you shouldn't be playing sports. And I don't get me wrong, I think you can keep players and universities and students safe with what's happened. I don't think you can live in fear. I think you've got to be able to lead in action during all of these, you know, questionable and what we've, the facts that we don't know. But if you were really to sit down with the myocarditis questions, with what are the long-term effects of somebody who's 25 or 24, 23, who's an athlete who gets COVID-19.
Well,
but then, you know, I'm just saying.
But then what about CTE?
No, I'm just, you know what I'm saying? I don't, like, disagree with that.
I guess that's my biggest pet peeve about the whole we care about the players argument is, so you care about them if they get a lung condition, like not a lung, most people are barely affected by COVID. I get that a lot of people are affected majorly by COVID. I understand that. So why are we pretending that the Big Ten gives a shit about students now, but because of what could potentially happen long term from COVID, but we're not, but they don't give a shit about CTE. I mean,
you'd have to ask the presidents and chancellors that don't want to play.
No, but I want you to answer.
I don't know, because I think that there's a way to play with it. And President Carter has said to me this multiple times on and off the record. He's been like, you know, we have got to be able to, we can't be frozen in inaction. We've got to lead. We've got to figure out how to learn with the virus. Because he says, even if a vaccine comes about, you're still looking at this virus being around for at least another year. Especially by the time, like, I get it, or you and I get a vaccine, if you want the vaccine, because we're not going to get it right away. It's got to be scaled, and they got to have millions and billions of doses if you're going to use it worldwide. I think that there is a way to play. It's just how can you get enough people to – how do you get enough people to say yes is the real question. So I don't know – and I think there's I think outside of, is it safe to play? There's inequity issues involved. There's competitive advantage issues, I think, that are involved with that as well. There's obvious legal ramifications.
What are the competitive advantages? That's interesting.
What happens? Okay, let me phrase you this. Let's say in a normal season, we got COVID-19, it's a normal season. Teams, universities aren't releasing data, aren't releasing COVID-19 data. And you play a team, other team gets sick with a bunch of cases. Let's say it was Ohio State playing Rutgers, hypothetically. Rutgers has the cases, they're not disclosing it. Ohio State comes in and play them. Their top three players on the team get it. They quarantine for 2 weeks, and they're maybe still not at 100%. They go out week three, play Michigan, play Nebraska, play a team that's maybe not very good and get beat. Then they're out of the playoffs. Now, if Ohio State would have realized that Rutgers had X amount of cases, they would have said, we're not going to play. We're not going to play because there's this threshold. And I think that has to be regulated by the Big Ten Conference. I think conferences have – so that's the competitive advantage, I think. Plus, what happens if you just have a quarterback that's sick and you don't disclose that he's – I just think that there's – I think that there's potential of issues there with not disclosing it. You don't have to disclose – I mean, I personally, as a reporter, I think you should disclose them publicly. But – in the very least, do it conference-wide. At least if I put myself in a coach's perspective.
Right. So then they can better protect their players because there's no bullshit. Because a guy like Harbaugh and a guy like Row the Boat will absolutely lie about COVID and use that to their advantage. They'll get what they'll do. I guarantee this will happen. Row the Boat guy, he's going to get his third-string quarterback taking one of them COVID parties, get him COVID, have him – transfer to a different school that plays like Iowa and Ohio State before them. Then his job is going to be to get those players that matter sick. So when they play Minnesota, they're sick. Minnesota wins, gets a national championship. That player then transfers back, gets the ring. Boom.
Welcome to Tweety's mind, Kellen.
I don't know. Right? May have lost you in the middle on that one.
How? I feel like I explained that one perfectly.
We haven't had any of these wild theories in a few weeks. And you know what? It's been a hell of a way to welcome you back, man.
I predicted when Bo Pelini came out with the cat, I predicted that the week before. I said he's gonna come out and he's gonna do something stupid like hold up a dog or a cat or some shit, and then he did.
Well, you have now been subjected to the genius of Tweety, Kellen.
Thank you.
And you can now take that back to KLIN. Use that in your reports in between sharing war stories with Jack Mitchell with being on the Big Red Cobcast. And I hope it was worth it.
I appreciate you having me on. Yeah, definitely. I can use Tweety as a source that this is what's happening.
If you ever need an anonymous source or a non-anonymous source, whatever you need. If you just need me to say something for you, just tell me, and I'll say it.
Spokesperson, there we go.
Just some wild on-the-record statement that you can cut up and put in your reports.
Yep, I don't care. I have no qualms with that.
Well, Kellen, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate you coming on and, you know, talking about what I imagine isn't like your favorite topic to talk about. We've done that to now two people named Kellen, because we brought on Kellen Houston to talk about the time that he punched a Missouri fan. So
you also deserved it.
So Kellen, thanks a lot, man, and best of luck moving forward on KLIN.
I appreciate it. Let's do this again sometime.
Yeah, sounds thanks, good. Man. It was a lot of fun, dude.
Thanks a lot. That'll do it for us on the Big Red Cobcast. Follow us on Twitter at Big Red Cobcast. We're on Facebook.com/Cobcast, Patreon.com/Big Red Cobcast. That'll do it for us. Tweety?
Fatty rides the bus.
Fatty rides the bus.
All right. Bye.
Has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.
The Sea of Red, Husker Nation.
See what makes Nebraska fans the greatest fans in college football with a new movie directed by Lincoln native Ryan Tweedy.
Through These Gates.
The perfect gift for Husker fans.
Available on DVD now at huskerfilm.com.